Good morning, everyone. Thank you for joining us here. Today is the City of Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District Advisory Board meeting, and I'd like to thank everyone for coming today, and I'd also like to thank our board for being here. We're going to call this meeting to order at 9:02, and members present today, I've got Stephen Allen. I have Joan Solu. Thank you for being here. Amish Patel, Chris Kosteka, Nancy Dickinson, and myself, Charlie Yates. Absent today is Isaac Sue. As we call this meeting to order, I'd like us all to take a moment and reflect. Moment of silence, please. Thank you. Can we all rise for the Pledge of Allegiance? Okay, I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. We all know that. God bless America. I'd like to open up the mic to any board member announcements. Seeing none, we're going to move on. Staff announcements?
None at this time.
I'd like to open the floor up to any public comment. Christine Johnson's going to make a presentation about the very exciting news happening with the Central Coast Aquarium.
Good morning. Thank you very much, Chair Yates. Okay. Good morning. Great to be here. Thanks for the time. I appreciate getting snuck in on this big, heavy agenda day you've got going on. My name's Christine Johnson, Executive Director, Central Coast Aquarium. In front of you, you do have a copy, hard copy, of the PowerPoint presentation, and you also have some other things that I'll be mentioning. Okay, so we'll get started. So just so I have a gauge, if you don't mind raising your hands, those of you who've been to the Central Coast Aquarium in Avila? Oh, okay, great, perfect. So then I will spend a little bit of time on the history of the entity itself, and then I'll scoot as quickly as possible to the Morro Bay project, and then I'll be able to take some Q&A, as long as I stick to my 10 minutes. So Central Coast Aquarium's mission is to cultivate a community dedicated to ocean stewardship through education, engagement, and action. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization. This is interesting here to spend just 10 seconds on. The founders were Russ and Carol Kiesig. Maybe some of you knew them. They were the owners of the Sycamore Mineral Springs Resort and Avila Hot Springs Resort a long time ago. And they were the founders. Actually, Russ had a history from his childhood with sports fishing, and he just brought that love of the ocean to Avila, and he started out teaching marine science classes on the Harford Pier, just kind of by himself, one guy. And then from there, it grew over the years to a place where we just celebrated 25 years as a nonprofit. So you may have heard of Port St. Louis Marine Institute, which is his first name, and then it transferred to Avila Beach Sea Life Center. At that time, the building where we are now, 50 San Juan Street in Avila, was built due to the remediation funds that were made available because of the underground oil spill in Avila. Unfortunately, Russ did pass away in 2005, wasn't able to see the building open, but it did open, and it was originally just for school students and maybe the general public once in a while. In 2013, the name was changed to our current name, Central Coast Aquarium, to reflect the fact that we are SLO County's leading resource in marine science education along our 100 miles of coastline. Board of Directors, we are a nonprofit. We have a volunteer board of directors. We have 3 full-time management staff, 4 part-time aquarium educators, and obviously we would not be able to open without those 80 volunteers. So we have docents who guide you through the exhibit hall, and we have people who help feed our fish, clean our tanks, and facilitate school programs. what's our impact? Who cares what we do unless we're making an impact, right? So what we can point to are through either a school program or an outreach activity, like when we were here for the Amgen finish, or when we come to the Morro Bay Aquarium, or excuse me, the Morro Bay Library. Through those activities, we've reached 33,400 students or members of the public through our outreach and our educational programs, and this is in 18-19. And we are on track this year to welcome at least 32,000 visitors to our little small two-room aquarium in Avila Beach. So we started to take zip code information. It's voluntary. We ask people to tell us if they're willing. And in the summertime, in the spring, it won't surprise you that our visitors come from Tulare, Fresno, and Kern County. And then in the winter and fall, we see our locals who come, and then many people from northern Santa Barbara County. We have quite a few visits from Santa Maria. We're open every day, but Monday, 10 to 4, at our location. Our admission is $8 for general admission, $5 for seniors and active duty military. We do see quite a few people coming from our military bases locally here. Free for kids under 2. We encourage locals to spend $80 to get an annual membership, and then they have unlimited visits. And we're going to be open in the summer of 2020 from Memorial Day to Labor Day, 7 days a week. So, getting to Morro Bay. And I skipped ahead. There we are. So, since 2013, the Morro Bay, the city, Central Coast Aquarium, and Cal Poly Center for Coastal Marine Sciences agreed in concept to a public-private partnership for redevelopment of the Morro Bay Aquarium, which is now closed. It was a feasibility study was commissioned. The city in 2016 had some economic development funds. Of course, it's very different today, but they did have them there. They donated to that feasibility study, but yet little progress was made in those almost 5 years. In May of 2018, Central Coast Aquarium, who was the lead on the project, had some new leadership. There was some new leadership in the city, renewed energy for the project. The market and economic feasibility study was $44,000, and in 5 months, we were able to raise $34,000. And there's a breakdown, $10,000 from that Morro Bay city money, $4,000 from the county supervisors, and $30,000 from members of the public, mostly private citizens, but including a few Morro Bay business owners. So in 5 months, to raise $34,000 for a project that is nothing but a bunch of paper and a report at the end of the day, I think shows there is incredible energy and interest, at least, in this project. So in March 2019, we presented the feasibility study to the City Council. It revealed that, you won't be surprised by this either, all nonprofit aquariums require funding beyond what they earn. Morro Bay has a potential to earn 75% of its annual operating budget versus the 65% that industry-wide the feasibility study mentioned. Why? Why Morro Bay? The waterfront site, immediate access to the bay, abundant wildlife for viewing, Cal Poly's collaboration, the number that 800,000 people visit or pass through Morro Bay, and then access to Highway 1. If you're interested in the study, it's available on our website, centralcoastaquarium.com. And then key takeaways. This project is not feasible if it takes on debt. There had been the hope, perhaps, of a USDA loan at some point in the project, but feasibility study revealed that debt will not be possible. We won't be able to cover the payments. The project's not feasible if there's no offer of land lease support from the city. So in terms of what is the land lease going to be, what kind of a lease term would the city give the nonprofit aquarium, if it is, let's say, a market rent land lease, then its project's just simply not fundable or not feasible. Right now, our land in Avila is $1 a year through the county. And then if funding is not secured by a combination of private donations and public grants, the project's not feasible. In other words, there's no pot of money somewhere waiting for this project, and it's not in the city, and it's not at our nonprofit. It would have to come, new money coming in. There are grant opportunities, but obviously most of it will be private philanthropy. So even with this, the city said, well, let's move forward and see what we can do. So where we are now is phase two fundraising. We have a one-year timeline from March 2019 to generate interest in the project, and here we are. Phase two, we need a concept plan. What will it look like? What will be on the inside? What will be on the outside? And then finally, what will it cost? The Central Coast Aquarium had two bids, 10G Aquarium Systems. They're located in Carmel. They do a lot of work for aquariums, and locally we've worked with them in Avila. They're great. These are their two bids. RRM, a local design group that knows our waterfront pretty well. In order to get this concept plan finished, which is $38,200. We've currently raised $26,300. We're going to pick up a $5,000 check. It's included in that blue number this afternoon. So our balance needed for phase two is $11,900. So it's significant progress in just a few months. And we're really pleased. Most of this funding has come from businesses in Morro Bay, including thank you to the Allen Group, who donated as well. So while this just tells you what the concept plan will bring to us, this is critical information that we need to know. All of this information will then be the basis for any future capital campaign. But before we go to raise the capital money, it'll come back to the city. Activities, you all probably got a letter from me maybe in August. It's the same letter that's, well, if you own a property, if you own a hotel, you got one. It's on your desk right now, asking for, it's kind of a project update like I'm giving you today, and asking for philanthropic support if you can. I'm also going to go to the Chamber of Commerce. I sent a letter to their membership, same letter, just a different two-line. And I sent the same letter to the Embarcadero Master Leaseholders. There are some that have donated, not all. Really just to let them know that this is indeed moving forward and where we are. I'm here today, hoping to reach out to vacation rental owners. And this is just basically an update and a request for support. So it's not possible to move forward without the support of a cross-section of folks. We definitely have a lot of public support and individuals who are willing to support us, and that's not just from Morro Bay. It's from the three areas in our coast. You know, we kind of look at Cayucas and Los Osos as our partners, but also people in San Luis Obispo. Visionary 2 donor recognition. If you give $1,000 or more, you go into a Visionary Circle donor recognition, which if there ever is an aquarium, will have a prominent place on the wall. And all tax donations are tax deductible, or all donations tax deductible. And we haven't spent the money. I want to say this too. If we don't reach our goal of $11,900, the money will, you know, be refunded back to you, or you may decide to keep it within the organization and use it for another purpose. So we haven't spent any of the money yet. Okay, so I know that was quick, but I think that's okay. You have the information you need, and now I can take any questions if Jen says there's time. Thank you. And you also, please feel free to reach out. Another thing I want to mention just briefly is that there's also another sheet. It's an invitation to all of you as TBID members and all of hotel owners and hotel managers. You can have a behind-the-scenes tour in Avila. Just give us 2 days to set it up for you, and we'll show you how things operate and talk about how it could be similar to Morro Bay but also very different than what we would have in Morro Bay. Thanks.
Thank you so much. This is such an exciting thing for Morro Bay. I know how exciting it was for Avila Beach and for the county and for tourism and for our future generations to learn about the man ocean interface. I think it's critical. So thank you.
Great. You're welcome.
Thank you, Christine. That was a great presentation. You know, as a kid, we used to go to Monterey and Cannery Row, and right before the Packard family was instrumental in bringing in the Monterey Bay Aquarium. You know, I don't think we're going to do something of that size, never know, here in Morro Bay, but what a great thing for tourism and for the community. So we appreciate it. Our business did contribute. I would encourage all of you, you know, to talk to your companies and do what you can. But thank you for your efforts in this. It's appreciated.
Thank you very much.
Christine, did I hear you say that those that donate to this phase, if you don't reach your goal, that those monies are refundable if they so choose?
Yes. Okay. We hope we could talk you into keeping it for marine science education in another way, because we are a countywide entity. But absolutely, if this is what your passion point is for the project, then those monies would absolutely come back. Yeah, we haven't spent any of the money for this.
It's great news. Thank you. Can you tell me a little bit more about the structure of the public-private relationship?
Great. So the city and Cal Poly and Central Coast Aquarium, those are the three entities. The city and the Central Coast Aquarium have had more time to communicate back and forth with one another. So that partnership looks like Central Coast Aquarium running the day-to-day facility, operating Avila and Morro Bay. The changes that we could make would be dependent upon the Cal Poly process. So then they are also figuring out on their end what exactly they want out of a potential new place in Morro Bay. They also do run now there's the Cal Poly Pier, which is in Avila, which is a large infrastructure need for them, and they do have a lot of expenses, so they're trying to figure out what could they benefit from Morro Bay. And then so about 2 months ago, we had some key folks here on site in Morro Bay, and it was just endless. We were there 2 hours talking about the possibilities, and I think that was the first time they really thought about this could be their forward-facing marine science education, really storefront, because the pier is only open once a year, and it's not accessible to the public. It's a whole 1 mile till you walk out there, and that's where they have a lot of research. What they don't have is a way to celebrate to the public what they're doing in terms of marine science education. It's a younger major, but it is now a standalone major within the biology department, so they are excited about doing, like, you know, you could change an exhibit where an exhibit wouldn't be just an exhibit, it would be a research project. They're excited about being right on the water, excited about what you could do right off the dock, excited about underwater cams we could set up. So lots of things like that. That will be the difference between Morro Bay and Avila, is that with that Cal Poly piece. And then right now, Avila is set up really well for K through 4 or 5, grade 4 or 5, kids to come and experience the aquarium. It's really built for them. It's their size. But having Cal Poly Research classroom on the second floor of the aquarium would then allow us to open up a whole new program for older students, say like middle school to high school. So right now this morning, we have a group of high school students with Central Coast Aquarium right now out on Captain Stu's Bay Cruise going over to the sand spit, and they have an underwater ROV that they're guiding around to see what's under there. So those things you can do for students, but we're also able to do those things with the general public. So everything we do for a student, we can do for people when they come on the weekend. So this September, we're going to do squid dissection to the public. So in other words, you pay $8 at the aquarium, you pay $12, and you can do a squid dissection with your entire family on the second floor. That's what we'll have available, and that's how we can add value to, you know, the tourists. So we already have the curriculum and the skill set. So we just have to create a program so that people will come with their families and say, oh, yeah, that's cool, let's do that. So those are the kinds of partnerships. But the city, the partnership that we're really counting on, is having the help with the lease. So if they're charging us fair market rent, then it's just not going to be feasible because we won't make money. It's not going to be a profitable business. Yeah.
Great. Thank you. I'm particularly interested in some of the things that you're talking about the differentiation between the Avila experience and the Morro Bay experience, and how your could help us to drive overnight stays, not just day visitors. So how do you see yourself creating a program that really entices families to come and to stay for multiple days?
Well, it's interesting because if you think that the space we'll have on the second floor is something that we do even now in Avila, but Avila is difficult. It's a little bit off the beaten path, right? So we have evening programs for adults where we have, you know, science talks and wine and snacks, and it's just hard to get people to come into Avila unless they're physically staying in Avila, and then we do see them walk over because there isn't a whole lot to do in Avila, but there are a lot of places to stay. So those kinds of things we would build in, those evening programs that would happen when the aquarium is closed. Other things we would do is there's so many businesses that are already invested in the Embarcadero, and we would just partner with them to add on things like the ticket. So Captain Stu, you can come into the aquarium yourself for $9.95 is what the feasibility suggested, and then for a few extra dollars, you come back at 1 o'clock and you go on the tour with Captain Stu and you go to the sand spit, or you do a sunset tour, or you do an early morning bird watching tour. So there are all these things we can work with the existing paddleboard companies, kayak companies, and boat tour companies to build in that two or three experiences within, you know, one weekend that we could offer that would be different than just walking through an aquarium. So, I mean, simply just putting a docent with a group of people at 8 o'clock in the morning and walking up and down the Embarcadero is an incredible experience they're not likely to have in Los Angeles or Kern County or somewhere like that.
Thank you.
Sure. And if that's that.
I was waiting for a mishpat. So I'm curious, so well, first of all, thank you for the great presentation. What a terrific update on the project. And I hope it moves forward. So is the next hurdle the $11,000 piece? Is that the last hurdle to move forward to the next step?
Exactly, yes.
Okay. And so here today with your presentation, are you asking for general support from the TBID for that? Is that something that, or are you just putting it out there to try and get it out to the whole community as a general? Because I can see where this would obviously, moving this project forward, it seems like an incremental amount that could help move the project forward a little quicker and get over the hurdle, but obviously it's not a budget line for us now, but maybe it could be. And what was your deadline date on that, $11,000?
Well, the city's given us 1 year from March, and my next quarterly report to the city is October 8th. So it is short term, but that's fine because you saw how the project really lagged for several years. Uh-huh. So we're supportive of a quicker timeline. It would be great to have it wrapped up by October 8th, but any significant progress, I can report back to the city that, you know, there are a few things that are out there that people want to support. There's,
sure.
But this is not a direct request for TBID funding because I do understand that, you know, you make your budgets and you stick to them. Would we turn TBID funding away? No, of course not. But we definitely do think there's room for tourism-related business support. You know, you saw that $30,000 came from, I think, 5 or 6 of the nearly 50 people who donated to get to $30,000 came from folks who have businesses here, some on the Embarcadero, some are not. But they understand, you know, they can see the future, right, with Morro Bay having this attraction. I just think, quickly, if we could get, you know, another $1,000 donation or $500 donations from, you know, 10 or 15 businesses, that would be terrific. And then we would have those champions for the next stage moving forward, which is going to be a lot larger, which maybe that would be something if we get through this phase, because this is the stumbling block. If we don't get through this, it just says, hey, people aren't that interested, right? So we're not going to bang our heads against the wall forever. We think we're close, so we would love to get it wrapped up, you know, in the next month. But then certainly we would want to come forward in a formal way and make, you know, a request for funds from TBID at that point.
Okay,
unless
you
find there's some wiggle room in your budget this year.
Christine, and there's some recognition levels for different businesses if they support. Could you maybe just briefly tell us about those?
Sure. Well, the first, because the feasibility study is really difficult to get excited about, we did have Visionary Circle membership level for recognition, again, in the future if there is, you know, a structure. And that level started at $250 because we really weren't sure people were really going to care. We were really gratified that so many people did, and then actually most people probably gave at the $500 to $1,000 level just at that phase. That's how we could get there so quickly. So this time, Visionary Circle 2 is 1,000 and above. And then that recognition would be, again, part of that initial largest donor wall, whatever we would create. It would have the most prominent amount of recognitions. But truthfully, if there was a conversation about, you know, a larger donation of a $5,000 or $10,000 donation, we did have a $10,000 donation for this phase, and we are getting a $5,000 one from businesses. So at that recognition time, we will win to talk about how they can be recognized for the larger gift that they've given. So, yeah, it's all a work in progress.
Well, it's an exciting project, and I love how you're using technology out in the Bay, even coming up on this next visit that people are having. I think, you know, for the size that we have, Stephen mentioned it, I don't think we're going to have something ever the size of Monterey Bay Aquarium. So using the assets that we have in a unique way, that's very clever. So, yeah, really appreciate it, I think, by the whole community. Thank you.
Thanks so much. We appreciate your support and appreciate just your attention today.
Christine, so if you get through this phase and meet with the city and get on to the next phase, I'm assuming you're going to need to raise in excess of $100,000, $200,000 for construction costs. How, or more, I'm sure, but how is that? What's the plan on raising those funds?
Right. So right now, internally, we're keeping the funds in a separate savings account within Central Coast Aquarium's budget. Once we get past this phase, we will launch into a more public capital campaign. So right now, this is a really quiet fundraising time, going to just people who we think are passionate about it in general. And we've been fortunate to be able to raise the funds that way. But once we have final numbers, and that's what the concept study will give us, how much things are and what it will cost, then we would launch a capital campaign where we bring people in, you know, to a steering committee, and we create that. Hopefully by then we're able to talk to a few people and have some large donors secured, whether that's corporate or private, you know, some gifts of $500,000 or $1 million, because potentially it would be a several million-dollar project. Not that it has to be all bells and whistles initially, right? But it will be a significant investment. It's waterfront, it's California. So that process will be helped. The entity that will help us will be the SLO County Community Foundation. So they were able to step in and do all of the administrative work for the peer fundraising they did in Cayugas. So basically the checks go right to the Community Foundation, the money, because it's a large amount of money, and we're currently we are running another, not, you know, 5-0. We're running a business now in Avila. We don't want any question about those funds to be where those funds spent in Avila. This way, Community Foundation will have those funds, and they actually will do all the administrative work. They'll do the donor recognition letter. They'll do the reporting. So we were really fortunate that when we met with them initially, they offered that service to us. It'll be a very teeny tiny fee, but well worth in terms of transparency. And, you know, 3 full-time people, 4 part-time people right now in Avila. It would be a risk to the project that we would not be able to manage it. So that's. But it would be a large capital campaign like you see other people doing.
Yeah. So are you going to set up a separate 501c3 for the Morro Bay Aquarium?
It's not the intention.
Okay.
Because it would, at this point, what the feasibility states too, that there would be the same executive director for the two entities. So we wouldn't be doubling the staff. We'd just be adding appropriate staff.
Sounds good.
Yeah. And adding volunteers. Great. Okay. Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Awesome.
You,
yeah. Awesome job.
Oh, thanks. And you have my contact information, so please call me and come visit.
Thank you.
All right. That is very exciting. Moving on to business items. Oh, consent agenda. Sorry. Has everyone had a chance to look over the minutes from the last meeting? Can I get a motion to approve those?
I'll make a motion, Charlie.
I second it.
Call for a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Any abstentions? Pass it. Moving on. TOT report?
Sure. Good morning, Board. So we have the July TOT report for your review, and I just wanted to make a note on this that probably the biggest change in this was we had 4 weekends in 2019 versus 5 weekends in 2018. So our occupancy was down 2%, but our ADR was up 1%. You know, we tried to do the Patriot Pride during 4th of July, and it was well received by veterans. But, I mean, it's just very quiet on 4th of July weekend, unfortunately, in Morro Bay. It's very, very quiet. So is there anything I can answer for you?
Do you know what hotel rooms we lost this year? Last year that it says it reads 916 rooms. This year it reads 910. Was somebody under renovation?
That's correct. The Best Western El Rancho, which is now Twin Bay, had rooms down. They were down to 15 rooms in July while they were they've upgraded all their rooms.
Oh, okay, great. I saw that there. So that has an effect. Obviously, it has an impact, yeah.
In total money, but our occupancy is correct because we did make sure those rooms were
sure.
Pulled out.
Mm-hmm.
Any further questions or comments? Entertain a motion. Push this thing through.
Public comment.
Any public comment? Hello. Entertain a motion, please.
I'll make a motion to approve.
I'll second.
Calling a vote. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Passes. Thank you. And now we're searching for B2, approval of mental marketing reports from August. Megan.
Hello. So just a couple notes about the August marketing report. The website year-over-year comparison was down, but there is some information in your packet about how the Dream Drive affected last year's numbers, as well as additional ad buys talking about Highway 1 being open. And so if you compare the last 3 years, it's actually up 10.8% for the month of August. MorroBay.org continues to hold the number one search spot for Morro Bay searches. And Morro Bay searches are over 40,000 in Google each month. As far as keywords go, the Morro Bay Motel/Hotel keyword search continues to have upward movement. It's now at the 5th spot in under searches with a volume of 22,200 each month. The spring promotion started August 1st, the Sip and Saver promotion with the complimentary bottle of wine with a two-night stay. The campaign page views were over 5,000. They were promoted through paid digital ads at a cost of $15,000, and the projected revenue generated from that is $84,000. For press clips and coverage, 1.05 million estimated coverage views and 6.45 million in ad equivalency. A couple to point out, there was continued results from the July Oyster press release that we saw. So there was a pretty lengthy article that was written all about Morro Bay oysters, where they come from, why they're different, and then also how they can be affected in the future. And then we also had a visiting journalist come from Run Oregon, and he came for the 50th anniversary of the Rock to Pier run. So it was very much in line with our strategic plan in terms of the outdoor recreation center. And he actually published a couple of articles. This one in particular saw over 4.9 thousand views. And then the August press release was spend final days of summer doing four classic Morro Bay adventures. It focused on our outdoor goal videos and included the California Surfing Day on September 20th, which is tomorrow. And that particular article was picked up and republished and viewed over 245,000 times. Yeah, we actually have a group coming in. They're actually coming in today and staying overnight from Visit California, UK. And they are going to be doing surfing, specifically in Morro Bay. So we're excited about that. Show them,
Yay. Yeah,
Morro Rock and all that. Any questions?
What bumped up the Art in the Park content views by over 1,000%? Was it just not on before? Or so they... That number is like, whoa.
Honestly, I have no idea. We really don't promote them out much because we don't, it's a holiday weekend. And so, you know, Yeah. That's one of our mainstays is that we try to focus on midweek, off season, and not holidays or summer. So maybe they're growing. Maybe Yeah. They spent more money. They could have spent more money in their ad buy. We have no access to that.
I think they just weren't on before because they have over 1,000 views.
Yeah.
And so the percent, it's like maybe Yeah. There was one view before. Yeah, that's kind of a weird number.
I noticed that in our searches on the origin market for searches, San Francisco is number one, which is terrific, and Los Angeles is number two. Oddly enough, number nine is a place, Ottawa, California, which I've never heard of. That would be like Gustine
Canada.
Or something?
Ottawa, Canada.
Oh, Canada, I'm sorry. Ottawa, I've heard of then. That was the oysters. That was the oysters, I'm sure. They were probably going, oh, oysters. But I don't see Fresno on here anymore. Yeah. It's like Fresno has fallen off, and I know that they're a huge market for us, for the Central Coast. I mean, Mm-hmm. It's that easy drive, right? And so... I'm wondering what's going on there. Is there any insight on that, why Fresno may have fallen off of there on our top 10s?
I have no idea, but Yeah. We can ask, because usually the valley is on there.
Yeah, right? Yeah, it's Yeah. Not just Bakersfield.
It Fresno could have been like number 11.
I'm sorry?
It could have been number 11.
Oh, yeah, right. Right at the cusp. Right, didn't make the cut. Okay.
So remember, we don't spend money in the valley advertising. Mm-hmm. So the ones that you're seeing in the top 10 are where we've either had PR that's come out or we've placed media, digital media there.
Uh-huh.
So that might be the difference. I'm sure that they're up high in this next month because of Avocado Margarita. So
I had to... be in the Central Valley, which I love our farming communities, so I don't adore the heat. And so I have, and Christine has one too, football players at Morro Bay High School, and we're in this new Ocean League, and a lot of our games are in the Central Valley in these small farming communities, like 30 miles off of the I-5 due east.
Oh my gosh.
And I know it's pretty hot out there, but what was really interesting is, I spent the night a couple of times and watched their news in the morning, and they report their weather for like 30 minutes over there. And I'm not sure why, because the person turns into a zombie reporting 102 and 104 and 105. It just kind of doesn't really vary. But it would be interesting to see if we could get them somehow to report Morro Bay's weather over there. Because every time you meet somebody over there and you tell them where you're from, they're literally, oh, God, you have the best weather. We just have to get over there. We haven't, you know, if they haven't been there this summer, or we were there this summer and we stayed and it was just great. Oh, the weather is so great there. If we could somehow capture that, I don't know. Anyways, just a thought, because it's so hot over there. It made me think about that.
I like that idea.
The Morro Bay Maritime Museum was chosen by PG&E, and we did put in a interactive weather station, and that could be accessed and connected. So I'll look into seeing how we can get that data pushed out a little bit better. All right. I'd like to call a motion for approval of the mental marketing report, or public comment, rather, before. Seeing none, looking for a motion.
So moved.
I motion to approve.
Yeah, I'll second. That's fine.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
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 Motion and a second. And all in favor? Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Thank you.
No. Aye.
Moving on. Okay. Now we are at B3, consideration of the Morro Bay Tourism Business Improvement District Supplemental Annual Report, continuation of the TBID assessment for the fiscal year 19-20, with the inclusion of vacation rentals.
Okay. Did you take my... Thank you. It's okay. So this is coming back to you. It went to council, as you know, and they agreed that they vacation rentals should come in and RV parks should not. And so we're back here. This should be the last time that it comes to you before it goes through the council. And this is being really focused through our city attorney, just so you know. So the documents that are attached came from Chris Neumeyer. He wrote the supplemental annual report to make sure that it included everything that we need, as well as the municipal code needs some changes as well to include vacation rentals. So basically, this is just coming back to you as part of the... So usually we do our annual report right at the end of the year, and you approve it, and we renew the TBID. But since we're going to make a change to the district, we have to do it now for them to come in January. So that requires you reviewing the budget again and the additional money, and reviewing the supplemental annual report that he wrote, as well as the code, the highway code. So that's what we're doing here today. Yeah. So some things that I wanted to talk with you all about is the budget. Let me get to that. So as part of the City Council recommendation, they would like to see vacation rentals that are pre-booked to not have to pay TOT, because they book so far out. You know, that was a point of contention with VRs, that they were worried about, you know, people had booked 6 months ago and then they're going to get there and they have this additional cost. And so that was an agreement, and hopefully the board will agree to that. That's one of the recommendations today. And then on the budget, I started reviewing kind of the different parameters of what we need to do, and it's pretty involved, because one of the things that's kind of the issue is because they don't have their individual websites. They're hosted on like an Airbnb or a HomeAway. We can't pull that content just cleanly over onto SimpleView. We actually have to go in, rewrite the content, do new photos. I mean, it all has to be done over from scratch. So it's going to be a substantial time allotment. And so we're assuming the onboarding is going to be at least 2 months. Talking with Jackrabbit as well, same thing. They do have a platform that we can bring them in and clearly show hotels versus vacation rentals and clear the rates. And I'll bring that back next month and show you examples of other cities and how they're doing that. We'll go through that part of it. So we're not going to look at the technical side of how that looks, but they do have the ability to do that. So next month we'll look at, do we want to do that or not, but my recommendation is any leads are good leads. We want to keep those leads. We don't want to lose our direct leads. So looking at the budget, I'm sorry, I want to go back one more time with the recommendation for council to ask to have the vacation rentals not pay into the tax if they've pre-booked their room. What we're making an assumption that we're only going to see maybe 25% of the total income in this first year. That's what we kind of need to assume. Yes, Joan?
In the first portion of the year?
Well, January to the end of June. So instead of getting that back half, we're assuming we're only going to see maybe 50%, and the other 50% would have pre-booked. So I'm only assuming $40,000 into this budget from them. It could be lower, it could be higher, and if it is lower, we can adjust that at the year end with our accumulation fund. We do have extra funds in there to do that, so we're fine to do that. But city manager and I both felt we're fine at assuming 25% for now, and that's what I base these budget additions on. Okay? Everybody, that makes sense? Yeah? Everybody, okay. So let's go through the different budget items. So we'd like to start getting some of the digital media onto their platforms, and this would be with our outdoor goal videos, the 15-second videos that show the destination. And with those, we would do some videos specific to vacation rental lifestyle, you know, whether it's families coming out of their door and out onto the beach or something that really invokes that they've been in a home and they're coming to the beach or coming to the bay. So we'll do some new videos to show that, and we'll, but still selling the destination, and we'll run those for the digital media for this half of the year. And I would expect those to probably start running in March is our anticipation based on when we get the onboarding done. And I have planned for 5 12-second videos to be produced for that segment. For digital assets, really to have consistency and have the quality that we've raised our website to, we need to go out and get a hero shot of each property. That's 250. So that's one of the things we do, and the other digital asset that we need to do is the actual videos. So I have $7,000 in the digital asset line item for them. The onboarding is fairly substantial. As I mentioned, there's the integration from Jackrabbit, and we're estimating 125 hours of probably not staff time. We'll probably have to hire freelance to do that because we don't have the bandwidth to add that many hours. Some of the things on the onboarding, there is a Airbnb has a platform situation where you, if it's listed on Airbnb, those do move over, but they have an additional fee that's required to be paid for those, and they actually require their logo to be on our website, which I think is fine. But that, you know, that's all cost plus the Jackrabbit cost and Simple View cost. So that is the onboarding part of it. I expect it to take probably 6 to 8 weeks to onboard them. So if they come in January 1, hopefully by March they'll be up on our website and in our booking engine and running cleanly is my goal. That's pretty quick. That's really pretty quick. And then visiting journalists, it would be really nice if we start getting them in the mix now. I put $4,000 in line item for visiting journalists. It takes a long time to, you know, get people to actually come visit that are the quality caliber that we want. So we'll put that out there, and hopefully we'll get them in April or May. I'd love to have them during either the car show or the kite festival. Those are really good for families and vacation rentals. I don't know if we'll get journalists by then, but I think we should put money into that line item as well. Is there anything I can answer on the budget? Do you want to talk about the budget at all?
Nancy? Jen, what do you think is the continued maintenance, additional maintenance that you have to do? You've got the setup costs, but then you also have maintaining costs. What's going to be the estimates?
It's going to be manual. We're going to have to go and look at each site, compare them to the licenses for the year,
yeah,
and make sure that they are still – I mean, we'll have very few fall off, but – it'll definitely be,
yeah,
a challenge. But the intention is to write the content for each one of those VRs that, you know, is the quality that we want and have them approve it. And so those will live on our site, and hopefully those we won't need to do much.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be.
Is that something you think that you have to keep in charge of, or is that something that becomes part of when that the vacation rental person themselves has to take that on going forward? Like maybe you do the original setup and infrastructure and transfer over, but then that's part of their responsibility?
You know, right now with hotels, it's shared.
Yeah.
I mean, honestly, it is the hotel's responsibility to make sure their listings are up to date, but I am very active, as well as our staff is, to look at their listings and see if anything needs to be changed or updated, or sometimes rates fall off with Jackrabbit. I mean, so we're very active.
Yeah.
In that.
I think my concern is just that there's fewer hotels than there are VRs.
Oh, yeah.
So, you know, it just becomes a big wave of work and constant changes. So, anyway, just something to think about, you know, as you go.
You're totally right.
Setup is one thing, maintenance is another thing. So.
Yes. You're totally right, Nancy.
Jennifer, long term, it appears that we're kind of budgeting for that new revenue through the short term rentals. But the question I have is, considering that we may lose city funding in the future, if we spend it all, then we're still going to have that same problem if and when that money disappears. Are we considering that in budgeting of the new revenue stream through?
So that would be fiscal 2021. So our budget is approved by council and it's in place. We don't have to worry about that this year. But we might need to address that for sure. Yeah. I mean, honestly, what should happen after we get them onboarded and we come into looking at next year's marketing plan, it should be very seamless between all the lodging. It should be promoting the destination and come to Morro Bay and less of the hotel specific. I mean, a lot of that will just go away naturally, and that will be fine. So we will free up some money that can be used for digital spending or whatever we feel we need to, you know, add to it. Yeah. But we'll definitely probably address it, yeah.
Jen, our motion from last month included RVs as well. Can you give a brief explanation why those aren't in this budget?
So council approved to just bring VRs in and VRs and not RV parks. Just felt that it was very inconsistent when they have the amount of state and federal campgrounds in Morro Bay and looking at their total overall numbers.
So I just want to make sure that I have clarity.
Yeah.
So we're voting to bring vacation rentals in starting January and going through June 30th. We will do this same process all over again in May so that we can remain on a fiscal year in line with where we are. Okay, that's what I wanted to know. So just so we stay clean with the fiscal matched with the city.
Yeah.
Right. Okay.
We'll also have to review our agency. We're on a two-year review. I mean, there's a lot of moving parts, unfortunately, this time. So.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well.
Yeah.
What do you do? It's how it goes,
exactly.
Right? So, just keep going forward. So, okay. So I just wanted to make sure we were going to remain on a fiscal because the budget process would be really wonky for us if we didn't. Okay. So this is round one, and in May we'll have round one. So there you go. Okay.
So are we looking for individual one, two, and three motions, or can we do one motion for B3?
You need to do the three things, but I have some more things to go through really quick.
You.
So let me finish going through this stuff. So I just want to really talk about a little more in depth on the pre-bookings that City Council asked us to take into consideration because it was a little different from what you guys had done. And I'll just read through the section. It says, staff recommends that TBID Board recommend to City Council that the City honor those specific terms and contracts executed prior to inclusion of TBID for actual stays through June 30, 2020. In other words, if someone has a contract executed in December 31, 2019 for a stay in June 20 or even 2022, those customers would have to pay no TBID assessment. However, for contracts executed prior to December 31st, they stay after June 30th, those individuals would have to pay the tax. It's very confusing. But are you guys, it's different than what we had originally talked about. The discussion when it came to you last time was for them to just come in and start paying as of January 1. I'm hoping that you're okay with this. I think it's reasonable, and it's what City Council has...
Reasonable to me.
Okay. You guys want to discuss that part of it at all, or...
Could you maybe read that again?
Yeah. So let me find it in your staff report really quick. It's on page 42 under discussion. Wait, maybe that's not it. Let me see. I'm sorry, it's on page 45. At the top it says honoring vacation rental contract execution prior to inclusion of TBID. In directing staff to begin the process of including VRs into TBID, City Council further directs staff to honor the terms in contracts executed between VR owners, managers, and their customers prior to TBID inclusion date, early 2020. This was done because there is an assumed lag time between VR customer contract execution and the actual time the customer stays in the VR. Council felt it was important to honor those contracts so that VR customers are not billed the 3% assessment when it wasn't part of the term of their contract when it was made with the VR owner or manager. Is that a little clearer?
I think that's fine.
It's fine.
Yeah.
So, I just want to be very clear. So, July 1, if they have a contract that was executed for them to stay between July 1st and July 4th of the upcoming year, and it was executed this July 2019, they won't be paying the TBID assessment on that July 1st to July 4th. Because the contract was executed in 2019.
Yes.
But if they are making a contract on January 1st of 2020 for July 1st through July 4th of 2020.
You're getting it. This is good. Yeah.
I'm just spelling it out. July 1st through July 4th of 2020. They will be paying the TBID assessment, correct?
Correct.
Bingo. Got it.
Okay.
There was some other thing you said in there. There was some.
It just
is that it?
Down.
Is those that was
that
it?
Was the, it?
Oh, good.
So now to go back to the budget. So the total anticipated income into the bid for a year for 12 months would be roughly $169,000. So for half a year, we're assuming $80,000. With this addition from council, that is why I only put $40,000 into my budget. So it could be more, and if it is more, you know, we'll make an adjustment and roll that into our accumulation fund, and if it's less, we can adjust our balance correctly from the accumulation fund as well.
This might be a little nip, but I think your example, they would pay, because if they book prior to December 31st, 2019, and have stays after June 30th, 2020, those individuals would be assessed. So July 4th example, they would be paying. Yeah.
Contracts executed prior to December 31st, 2019 that have stays after June 30th, those individuals would be assessed TBID.
Right. So if somebody booked a July 4th on July 4th of 2019, they booked it now. They will pay the 3%.
So after June 30th,
yeah.
Everyone.
Yeah.
I think the city's saying that's probably enough notice to give some
absolutely
to say there's been any change.
Which I think is true.
Yeah.
How are you going to underwrite all that?
But if
with all it's going to be the honor system pretty
honor
much.
System,
yeah.
Sure.
Just
like it is with hotels, to be honest. So that's an accounting. I have no idea. That's accounting process, and they're going to have to figure out how to do two different forms.
If they do Airbnb and they have a stay July 1st through July 4th of 2020, I don't think Airbnb is capable of setting it for that date forward. There's a 3% assessment, if that makes sense.
The individual owners have that ability to do that. We have a couple in Los Angeles, so the owners will have the ability to do that. I think we have some people here today. And you usually have direct contact with them, or you have a property manager that's in direct contact with every guest that's coming in.
Yeah.
Okay, so continuing on. One of the other recommendation is to move money from our accumulation fund. We do have dollars available over our minimum requirement in the accumulation fund, so I'm requesting CBID to make a recommendation to council to move $10,000 into our current fiscal 19-20 budget. And my intention is to use $6,000 of that towards visiting journalists and $4,000 towards unfunded grants. As you remember, when we did our grant review, we only approved the larger grants that were pretty substantial. Some of the ones that didn't get approved, like Santa's House didn't get approved. And it's pretty important for Morro Bay in December. So we can do it several different ways. I can reopen it like for Central Coast Aquarium to put in an application for funds to help. I have another request. We haven't opened grants, but I have another group that has requested an option to put in cameras out on from the land to look at the seal dock and to look at the otter area. So that's kind of an interesting thing. So there's some other things out there. I mean, $4,000 is not a lot of money for grant applications. And so I'm hoping that you'll approve that recommendation as well. If you have concern about it, we can talk about it. They will come back to you, and you will get to see who submitted grants and what those will be. Can I answer any questions on that?
I have a question for you and maybe Red while he's listening. It's maybe premature for us to donate any monies towards the aquarium plan, maybe. But I'm wondering, would the city see it as symbolic if we did earmark $1,000 of this that you're speaking of to show that TBID has the support, and would that thus help show the support to the city to maybe give them a sweet lease?
Do you want to speak to that, Red, or...?
Wouldn't that be a, I hate to say these words, future agenda
yes,
item?
It would.
It would probably be a future agenda item to look at.
I think
overflow.
The better thing to do is just reopen the grants and see who submits, and then when they come back with those applications, we can talk about that stuff. Yeah. Okay, so with that, I have three recommendations for you. First one is to approve the supplemental fiscal annual report for expenditures of funds to be derived from the addition of the VRs, and recommend City Council to continue the 3% TBID assessment in 1920. The supplemental report both provided supplemental recommendations on changes to the basis and the method of levying the assessments, as I mentioned, so it went into the city code and the highway code as well. Any changes in the classification of businesses, and further addressing the effects of the proposed changes in the next 6 required elements of the annual report, which are also in the supplemental annual report that Chris did. Second is to recommend City Council approving move forward $10,000 from the accumulation fund to TBID current budget 19-20 for visiting journalists and event expenses. So we can change that from event to, say, grant, and that will make it broader if we want to do that. You can do that. And then the third is to recommend City Council honor vacation rental contracts put into place prior to VRs being added to TBID for stays in Morro Bay through June 30, 2020, with all stays thereafter being assessed 3% TBID assessment regardless of contract execution date.
Are we able to make a motion just
we need to do public
saying
comment.
To approve B3, 1, 2, and 3?
Well, we need to open public comment, and I think you might want to have board discussion to make sure you're all on board before we get that far, though.
Opening the floor up. Microphones available. Hi, Chuck.
Good morning. Chuck Davison, President and CEO of Visit SoCal. I just wanted to comment on this item because I want to offer Visit SoCal's assistance here. As I think most of you know, our tourism marketing district includes hotels, motels, vacation rentals, bed and breakfasts, and RV parks. And if you were to go to the SoCal website and go to Morro Bay under vacation rentals, you'd see on our Simple View platform, the same platform that you list, there's already 56 vacation rentals listed with photos and content and copy. be very easy for us to be able to help port that information over to your site as a starting point. We work with the vacation rentals every single year. We do an annual audit of 3,000 vacation rentals across the county, where we reach out and make sure that those vacation rentals are still licensed, the content that's on our site is up to date, and they are still open for business. So rather than you duplicating a process that's already in existence for your community, because we've been representing vacation rentals in Morro Bay for 5 years now, we'd love to offer Visits Locale's assistance with easing that staffing requirement for you as an organization. Just again, it's one of the benefits of Visits Locale and what we bring to the table.
Thank you so much. Any further public comment? Seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to the board for discussion.
There's just a couple of housekeeping issues that I see. Bringing it back, sending it back for approval the way it is. If you look on page 47 of 64, and you go down through the goals and objectives, I'd just like to see, for example, on number, it's under elements of the annual report, streets and highways code. It goes 1, 2, and then 1, 2, 3, 4. Under number 3, it says marketing of foreign independent travelers, FIT conference group, and film business that benefits local tourism and the local hotel industry. I'd like to see vacation rentals added there. So anywhere where you see where it says, like, goals and objectives number 2, occupancy and hotel motel revenues, should now read occupancy and hotel motel vacation rental revenues. Everywhere where hotel is called out, vacation rentals need to be included. It's part of keeping the housekeeping clean. And it's part of including them in the goals and objectives. I mean, it's what we should be doing. So anywhere where our motion should probably include that, anywhere where it says calls out hotels directly or motels directly, it should now include calling out vacation rentals.
Agree completely. Perhaps we just change it to stay overnight guests or overnight stays, just a generic term instead of...
Or lodging.
Well,
or
lodging,
it probably stay. Needs to be specific because it doesn't have RVs.
Right. It has to stay... in
specific,
my, I agree with that.
I agree.
It should probably... Until we get RVs on board, or if that never happens...
Can we just let the city attorney make that decision?
Yeah, that's
I will make
legal
sure
question.
That he updates that, and let's let him. I'll ask him. That's
Because it looks like we're asking them for money and not including them right now. That's all I'm saying. So I had that, and yeah. It goes on to the next page, too. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, whatever language the city attorney wants to do to include them, I'm game for. But I think we should definitely make that recommendation that that language is put in here so it just doesn't fall off.
And for then sure. The only thing I have is on number 2, that change events to grants.
Yep.
On number 2, recommend that city approve moving $10,000 from accumulation fund fiscal year 1920 budget for visiting journalists and grant expense, not event expense. Other than that, I'm good to go. Unless there's further discussion from you all.
There was also a follow-up resolution to these that the city has, and that resolution that outlines tourism, the tourism structure. And I don't remember what year that was. It was a couple of years ago. That one may need to be looked at, too, to make sure that it includes vacation rentals.
It will, and it will not come back to TBID. It
right.
Just goes to
it
city
doesn't
council.
Have to come back.
Yeah, staying in the city.
Yeah, as long as it's clean, you know.
So to make a motion, do I have to read all 3 of those? I can't see it from here.
Or can she just say approve, recommended by staff, the 3 recommendations by staff? Oh, but we're amending it. As amended, yeah.
Yeah. You
here.
Can just say.
I'll make a motion to approve the recommended 3. What do you have? Oh. The approved B3 recommendations 1, 2, and 3. Is that enough?
No.
As amended.
As amended, yeah.
I'll second.
Whew. Did I ever read it all?
All in favor? Public comment? Looks like we're moving on to a vote.
Aye.
All in favor?
You got to vote.
All in favor? Aye.
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 Thank you. All right. Now for some fun. We're talking about B4, the renewal of the San Luis Obispo County Tourism Marketing, the TMD. Visits locale. Chuck, come on up.
Well, good morning again. Chuck Davis, I'm President and CEO of Visit SoCal. I appreciate you making time for what we believe is a very important conversation for our community this morning. So I want to spend about 15, 20 minutes walking you through a presentation. The majority of this presentation is really future-focused, kind of where we believe the community is going, along with where we're trying to get the district, and then I'm happy to take any questions that you might have. So, kind of starting with this this first slide, we really believe that tourism is really the baseline for economic development in our communities. We talk about tourism as the first date for economic development, talent attraction, all of the things that happen in our community. And the cycle works like this. If you build a place that people want to visit, you'll build a place where people want to live. And if you build a place where people want to live, you'll build a place where people want to work. And if you build a place where people want to work, you'll build a place where business has to be. And if you build a place where business has to be, you'll build a place that people want to visit. So everything starts with the visit. Many of you know my story of moving here 7 years ago from Las Vegas. If I had not visited here for the 6 years prior to that, I would have never thought about this place as a destination to move to. And the same goes for business. People who are looking to invest here, they don't choose to invest without visiting the destination first. So what we do in the tourism industry is vital. Important to the overall economic development of our communities. Many of you know this tourism ecosystem. We really believe that the greatest opportunity for all of us is to work under the funnel that exists above us. These organizations above us are doing work for us and our communities that we can't do for ourselves, the same way that we are doing work for Morro Bay that you can't do on your own. And so many of you know the Obama administration established Brand USA about 10 years ago with a focus on how they bring more international visitation to the United States. Visit California, our state tourism organization, now with a budget of $140.6 million is focused on bringing those international visitors in the U.S. to California and the people in the other 49 United States to California as a destination. We're focused on those individuals who are coming to California. How do we get them into the boundaries of SoCal? How do we introduce them to this destination and make sure that we're capturing them? From there, obviously, Morro Bay is trying to make sure that the people that come to San Luis Obispo County are coming to Morro Bay. You're then trying to get them into your direct hotels, restaurants, retail, activities. I think one of the important things that I want to point out here is this funnel has been vitally important for the county, but there's some really specific areas where we can point to Morro Bay where this has been important. When we were in front of you 5 years ago for the original setup of the district, we were running on kind of the if-come, what we hoped would happen. We didn't have a track record as an organization when I took the organization over 5 years ago. Now we have a track record. And so when we think about this funnel, we go back to 2016 when the district originally rolled out and our strong partnership with Visit California. And for the first time in the history of Visit California, we got San Luis Obispo County included in their 32nd domestic and international TV spot. And what was the place in San Luis Obispo County that got included? It was The Rock at Morro Bay, right? So that recognition worldwide at the Visit California level because of the relationship that we have and the work that we do with Visit California. Most recently, I think many of you know my story with Expedia. I was the Vice President and General Manager of North America America for all of Expedia before I moved here. I have been beating the drum since I moved to this location about Expedia featuring this destination more, and now, again, Morro Bay is included in the Expedia commercial here. Equally, I think most of you know the work that we did around the historic 22-month closure of Highway 1 when it closed in November of 2016. And so not only did we do work during the 22 months of making sure that we had reroute messages out there and maps in seven different international languages and making sure that people understood that the coast was still open, specifically Morro Bay to Ragged Point, but when we finally did reach an agreement through much of our political work with our congressmen and our senators and our county officials, along with Caltrans, when we finally got Highway 1 reopened, based on a great idea by Jennifer Little that ultimately became what we know now as the Dream Drive, we were able to take that message to Visit California and get that championed. Originally, Visit California had no plans for the reactivation of Highway 1. Their belief was you don't want to spend a bunch of time telling people that the highway had been closed and now it's reopened. You want to kind of just move through it. We said that wasn't acceptable. I called Carolyn Beteta, the CEO of Visit California, on her cell phone, and we had a long conversation about the need for that that ultimately led to almost 100 media in this market that ended right at the Rock at Morro Bay, who stayed here for 3 days, and you'll see later in the presentation 834 million impressions from that three-day trip here to the county. So all of those items are work where this funnel has directly had an impact and a positive effect on the city of Morro Bay for the work that we have done one layer above you, driving that business down to your community. So you had in your electronic agenda packet a what we call our Tourism Marketing District scorecard, kind of a look at the last 3.5 years of the results of the organization. I don't want to spend a lot of time on all the details there because you have it, but I do want to highlight a couple things. Our paid media over the last 3 years has been $3.3 million. Again, this is in markets that you're currently not advertising or spending money in. So this year alone, our media budget's $1.2 million. I can tell you that yesterday our board approved an additional $400,000 to our media this year based on the announcement we made 2 weeks ago for the new direct service that we negotiated for Portland and San Diego. And we'll talk a little bit more about the air service in a few minutes. So our media budget this year is going to be $1.6 million, again, in these key feeder markets to help drive business to San Luis Obispo County. Our media and trade connections, we spend a lot of time throughout the year and across the world making sure that we are connecting with not only, again, that media that's coming here to tell the story of the destination, but also our travel and tour operators to make sure that we have the travel segments filled out for those of you in the hotel business who are looking for those segments, whether it be meeting and conference, receptive, tour operators. All of those pieces are the meetings that we're holding on your behalf. In addition, again, we've hosted almost 500 trade and media in the market over the last 3 years, bringing exposure to Morro Bay and SoCal as a destination that would not exist without us. From there, we talked about the Dream Drive, so I won't spend a lot of time on that, but that was a great advancement and a great ability for us to tell the story about a bucket list item here, Highway 1 on the Central Coast that's now reopened and activated. We spent a lot of time. We are an organization that is baked in research and data, and so we have launched 15 research projects over the last couple of years, many that were co-op opportunities that Morro Bay participated in. So whether it was economic impact, share of wallet, visitor volume study, all opportunities that you had to learn more about your guest and better inform the decisions that you and your agency are making from a marketing perspective, again, based on the work that we're doing on your behalf. And then lastly, the air service piece, in my previous life, I used to run large hotels in Las Vegas, and I spent a lot of time in the air service development world there. When I came to this position here, we worked very closely with the county and the airport to start the air service campaign that exists today. When I took over in this role, we had no new air service in this county for 10 years, and we were actually in regression of losing air service at the time. In the last 33 months, we have added 6 new markets and 10 new direct flights, something unprecedented for our airport. Our airport will celebrate its 2-year anniversary at the end of October, and we're already in a capacity issue right now on the new terminal. So I think, we've done some pretty phenomenal work in that space, again, on behalf of tourism and your local community. So where does that leave us? You know, we've got an interesting story to tell right now. Based on the Smith Travel Research forecast that we procured, there's an 11.8% increase in inventory coming to the community, the countywide community, over the next 15 months. Much of this inventory has opened over the last 3 months, and we have several hotels across the county that are getting ready to open in the next 90 days. So that's a great story to tell, because every time we get a new piece of inventory open in the county, it allows us to talk about something different and unique, and that's wonderful. But with that comes challenges. So the current forecast for those 1,100 rooms coming in before the end of 2020 is that we'll see a 3.5% decrease in occupancy and a 1.7% decrease in RevPAR countywide. You're seeing some of that in the slow of the market already. I do want to point you to something specific, and you'll see this. It'll be shared in our This Week in SloCal weekly email update today that I think many of you subscribe to and receive. But we'll report out on the August STAR numbers that came out yesterday. And Morro Bay is actually picking up ground right now. So it's interesting. You look at the percentage numbers across the county. Morro Bay, year-to-date on the fiscal year, July and August, reported. Again, based on STAR reporting, so you have a number of properties that don't report into STAR, but that's the baseline that we have to use because that's the reporting that we have. Based on the STAR report, Morro Bay's lost about 500 rooms year-to-date, July and August, 2 months combined. That's compared to San Luis Obispo, that's lost almost 12,000. So, you know, you're picking up market share against some of your communities. And when you look at some of the other communities that where the occupancy has dropped, their RevPAR has also dropped significantly. And year to date, you're sitting fairly flat, you know, on that RevPAR number, at least through the STAR report. So something important to keep in mind. So this is 11.8%. I think the bigger picture here is there's currently 2,000 hotel rooms under construction in the county. That's a 20% increase over the next 3.5 years. And so you couple this 20% increase, unprecedented in our community, with what's now a slowdown in the economy. How far it slows down, you know, when it completely slows down, what the bottom is, nobody knows. But kind of a perfect storm of adding 2,000 rooms and the economy beginning to slow. You then think about the possibility of not renewing the Visit SloCal TMD. And you have 2,000 rooms, a slowdown in the economy, and no more regional marketing, and you really create a tsunami effect for our communities that it's likely they will have a very difficult time, if ever, recovering from. And so, you know, the item that's going to be in front of you today for your consideration is really an up or down vote. We've spent, many of you know, we met with many of you as hoteliers going back over a year ago to talk about here's what's happening in the industry, here's what we need to consider, and that's where the terms that currently exist originally came from. We then spent 9 months in negotiation with the city managers and the county administrator that got us to this 10-year request at 1.5%. The negotiation on that piece is done and set aside, and the way the T-bid process works from a state level is it's in the petition, and what will be in front of you in the city council is an up and down vote. There is not a scenario of, hey, let's not do 10 years, let's do 5 years, and let's not do 1.5%, let's do 1%. There's no way to change the process. The train is already moving. And so what you will be deciding today and what your council will be deciding, should you move this item forward to them, is do we continue with the work and the efforts the Visit SloCal has done, or do we sunset the organization, close it down on June 30th of 2020, and let the operations that have existed cease to exist no more? So that's the item that we are faced with. So when we talk about you know, the growth of the market, again, it's a great story to tell. We have, when we started the organization in the TMD, 4 years ago, we were advertising in three markets, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and Phoenix, based on the flight. About $1 million at that time spread across three markets. Essentially, with all that air service development, we have grown these markets to what was 7 a couple weeks ago, and now will become 9 with these two additional flights that we've announced. And so we're taking now 1.5 $2 million and spreading it across 7 markets rather than $1 million and spreading it across 3 markets, which is starting to reduce our efficiency or at least exposure in those markets. So that is one of the reasons that we're in front of you asking for more funds. These markets are great. Our airport will always work in a hub and spoke model. We will never fly to smaller destinations. We will always fly from larger destinations. But the challenge with that is the markets that we deal in, 8 of those markets are in the top 25 MSAs in the United States, the top 25 most expensive and largest markets in the U.S. And so each of those markets costs more to be able to get liquid and advertise in and make sure that those residents there are flying. When we talk about air service, it's important because the work that we're doing in air service is not only diversifying ourselves against simply just being a California-based destination, but it's also opening up new opportunity. The visitors that come by air service would not be coming otherwise. You would be hard-pressed to find many individuals who would get in a car in Dallas, Texas, and drive to San Luis Obispo County for a vacation. That's not what's happening. Those individuals are getting on planes. And so when we talk about the air service space, not only is it the growth of new markets, but it's the growth of the current markets we have. So we launched service to Denver 2 years ago. I'm excited to say that next month Denver will go to 3 flights a day. Right. So we started with 1 flight originally. We moved that to 2 flights a little over about a year ago. And in October, it will go to 3 flights a day based on the amount of business that's coming in there. We started service to Dallas back on April 2nd this year. And in December, that will go to 2 flights a day in less than 8 months. And so when we talk about the advancement of the work that we're doing, you know, we're running a model that proves, you know, once those flights are full, the airline gives us another flight, and we continue to drive more demand into the market overall. Our destination management strategy has been an important undertaking over this last 18 months or so. Much of this is rooted, again, in making sure that we're maintaining and improving the resident quality of life here in this destination that all of us are so blessed to be able to call home. And many of these buckets apply to you. But I want to point to one specific thing. There's 28 recommendations that came out of this. Your city manager, Scott, was involved. He was on the steering committee. Red has been involved in this process as well, giving input and feedback as the recommendations came out. This is a countywide initiative. Morro Bay is the only community in this document that has its own recommendation. All the other recommendations are countywide. The Morro Bay recommendation was for the redevelopment of the waterfront and the power plant. The organization that did this, Residence Consultancy, has done over 100 of these plans across the world, and they found that property and this Embarcadero oceanfront to be so unique and specific that they called out a specific opportunity for the advancement and development of that in a countywide plan. I think that speaks to the level of interest and opportunity, not only that our organization has, but there is in tourism for Morro Bay. When we bring this item forward, we get the question a lot of, okay, well, what does the comp set look like for you against your regional DMO competitors? And so what you see on the screen in front of you is our regional comp set. So this is Napa County, Monterey County, Santa Barbara, and Sonoma. This, I want to be very clear, this is a county-to-county entity comparison. Those other destinations like Napa and Monterey don't include the individual city T-bids that exist there. This is county budget, unincorporated or nonprofit county budget to nonprofit county budget. So just like in the area of SloCal, it doesn't include the Morro Bay T-bid funding. But you see on this sheet that we are at the bottom. We continue to remain at the bottom of this comparison. And though we've made headway over this last 4 years with your approval originally to install the Tourism Marketing District, we still continue to chase those counties that have been at this a lot longer and have a lot more funding. When you look at it by county size, I mean, Napa's in a unique position. They have $7 million, and they're only responsible for a county that's 750 square miles. Versus us with a $4.4 million budget responsible for a 3,600 square mile county. In addition, when you look at this by hotel rooms, again, you know, some of these communities have a small number number versus where we are. One of the questions that often comes up in this is, why are these other communities so high? Why is their budget so high? And I think the interesting thing is when you look at all of those communities, they all get general fund TOT dollars. I think all of you know that our organization gets no direct contribution from general fund. All of our funding comes either from the TMD assessment or from co-op and advertising and other work that we do. And so in the case of Monterey County and Santa Barbara, they both get $3 million each in TOT funding. That's simply not going to happen in this community, and we understand that. Our cities are faced and they're grappling with how they use those TOT general funds to continue to pay for police and fire and education and roads, things that are all vitally important to us as residents of the community. And so what we're asking the municipalities and ultimately the Board of Supervisors to do is allow us to remain safe, allow us to remain sustainable, self-funded as an organization, as a tourism industry, to make sure that we're doing our part to continue to drive the industry forward, which ultimately ends up in a benefit for the community by additional people coming, additional TOT, additional sales tax, continuing to fill their general fund funnel. When we look at this by hotel room, the conversation actually gets a little bit worse. You know, we've got 9,000 rooms across the county. Again, you take a place like Napa that only has 5,000 rooms, and their expenditure per room or their ability to market dollars per room extremely high. I want to point to on this slide, this is our current state. When you add the additional 2,000 rooms that are being under construction right now, this graph actually gets much worse. That bar at the bottom begins to move farther and farther left, and our dollars per hotel room grow increasingly smaller. So what is in front of you is currently the Tourism Marketing District state mandate for the 94 Act, which is the act under which we operate. You operate as a TBID under the 89 Act. Different scenario. Yours is a renewal every single year with people, the ability to close the district down by people protesting against. The 94 Act requires a petition for. You have to operate in support of in order for the district to move forward. And after the initial 5 years of a 94 Act, you can pursue up to 10 years without bonding. In the case of San Diego, they bonded their district, and they're on a 40-year renewal. So they have 38 and a half years left to go for their tourism industry on how they establish their district, which is pretty amazing when you think about it. So we are in front of you with a request for a 10-year renewal, allowing us to get a longer runway, really do more in-depth advanced planning. When we talk about that destination management strategy, we're talking about a 20 or 30-year look at what the destination should become. So how do we spend time on that? In addition, you know, the current process, as you know, we report into seven municipalities and the unincorporated county. So this is a lot, takes a lot of time and energy every time we go through a renewal, along with, as you have probably experienced in your own front, the legal fees surrounding this renewal are significant as well. And so we're looking to create efficiencies by allowing that district to run for a longer term. In addition to that, looking to move from 1% to 1.5% assessment. And so I want to share with you in a minute kind of some of the key reasons why. When we talk about this assessment, one of the things that comes up and came up originally in Morro Bay 5 years ago is, where does this leave us in a competitive set? So if we increase by 0.5%, what does that mean against all these other destinations that we're competing against? And so you see here a slide that helps outline some of the communities across the state of California. Again, at an increase of 0.5% under the current terms, the average would put us at 13.5. Here in Morro Bay, that number would actually be 14.5. You are at a 10% TBID, or 10% TOT, a 3% TBID, and what would be a 1.5% visits local TMD. But you see, even at 14.5%, it leaves you below the current state average at 14.9. I think one of the important things to note about that 14.9 is a year ago that was less. The reason is there were 44 communities last year in November that had a TOT ballot increase initiative on their ballot. Of those 44 communities, 39 in the state of California passed an increase in TOT. So we expect in November to see an additional onset of communities with a TOT ballot initiative across the state of California, and that state average number will continue to tick up. Again, we don't believe as communities that we should be chasing those numbers. When we look at places like Anaheim with a 17% tax, we feel that that's too high. But one of the things that I think that we need to consider and take in mind here when we think about our competitive set, when you talk about destinations like Monterey and Santa Barbara, not only are their tax and assessment rates higher, but in those destinations, they're charging resort fees and parking fees at the majority of their lodging establishments, something that we don't have here. And it's not the way our community's set up. So those communities, higher tax and assessment threshold, additional fees on top of that with parking and resort assessments, this market continues to show value against those destinations. When we look at it again on a community-by-community comparison, again, most of the communities currently at 13%, the unincorporated county down at 12%. There is conversation in the county about increasing their TOT, which would likely get them leveled up with most of the other communities, and obviously then Morro Bay, right, currently at 14%. So where does the extra half percent go is the question that comes up. Again, there's a one sheet in your in the packet that you were sent, but the majority of those funds are estimated to go to advertising. It's thought by our board that up to 50% of those funds would go to direct ad spend, and I want to be very clear when I say advertising. We are not talking about agency fees. We are not talking about the build of assets. We are talking about ad placement. So we're talking about going from, you know, this year what has now become, as of the board's motion yesterday, a $1.6 million budget, and taking what's estimated to be about $2 million additional a year and taking $1 million of that and putting it direct into ad spend. So we go from $1.6 to $2.6 million, again, in nine key feeder markets, seven of which you do no advertising in at all. Again, us doing work that you're currently not doing yourself. So the biggest portion of those dollars, and the reason that's the biggest bucket on the screen, is because it's estimated 50% of those dollars would go to create additional demand in the market to help offset this 2,000 room increase that's about to occur. In addition to that, we believe that the sales support is going to be a key initiative. As we bring on all of these hotel rooms, creating a pipeline through meeting and conference, receptive, group tour business, all of those things are going to be important to help our properties fill those rooms that are going to be needed. International, we continue to believe, is a tremendous opportunity for us here on the Central Coast, again, with Highway 1 as a bucket list item. Those international visitors are coming. And yes, we all read the news and we see the slowdown that's occurring in international, but it's simply a numbers game when we talk about the international business. When we look at the concerns that are happening, our board pursues international as a long-term strategic investment. The work that we are doing internationally today does not result in a visitor tomorrow. It results in a visitor 9, 12, 18, 24 months down the road. And so we have to make sure that we stay in front of those visitors, and regardless of whether it's the trade wars or the visa issue that's taking place in China, or even the dollar valuation depending on which country you're coming from, the U.S. remains a strong international destination for travel. And we know that those individuals are coming to California. We know that they are traveling up and down Highway 1. And the opportunity is, how do we make sure that we're converting more of them from day trip to overnight trip to stay in our market, to stay longer as international travelers do, and to spend more money. And so international remains a focus. We talked about air service. I do want to make one thing very clear on our air service investment. Again, when I came into the role that I'm in today, originally, air service investment was based on something called a MRG, or a minimum revenue guarantee. In those days, it was thought that you hand the airline a $1 million check, they place that check in escrow, and when they don't fill the seats, they draw down against that escrow check. Something I've never believed in. It's not the way we ran air service development in my former life in Las Vegas. And so we shifted that model because the airlines in that model simply doesn't care. They don't care if they fill the seats or not. They're getting paid one way or another, whether they're getting paid by a customer or they're drawing down your money in escrow. So we shifted the model to our contracting with the airline is based on our infused advertising investment in the market of origin. So when we talk about, again, the board's decision yesterday, we will take $230,000 and place that in a media spend in San Diego County to help make those individuals aware of SloCal as a destination and that direct air service flight on Alaska Airlines. And we will take $170,000 and we replace that in Portland, and we will do the same thing there. So our air service investment is not dollars to the airline. Our air service investment is advertising dollars in those communities to get people to think of SloCal as a destination in their consideration set for people to travel to, and make sure that we're creating demand for our lodging investors like all of you. The last there is that destination management bucket. Again, I gave you the example of the Morro Bay waterfront and the power plant. We believe that there's huge opportunity for us to assist in how we move some of these key items forward. We've been a partner with Christine at the aquarium since she took over in that role and has been working on this. And again, that piece at the aquarium is a perfect example of what fits directly into that recommendation about the Morro Bay waterfront. So when we undertook this initiative, the city managers and Wade Horton, the county administrator, asked us to do an ROI study on our last 3.5 years of work to better understand what the investment made in our organization was returning to the community. So we engaged a third-party consultant, Tourism Economics. Many of you probably know Tourism Economics. They are the leader in the tourism research and economic space in the U.S. They do work not only for nonprofits like us, but they do all of the research for travel and tourism for the U.S. government. And so we engaged Adam Sachs and his team, and that return on investment proved to be 40 to 1. For every dollar we spend, there are $40 returned into our community. So an extremely high value. In the case of air service, the number is even higher. Again, we know that people that travel by air stay longer and spend more, and so that dollar investment in our air service markets returns 50 to 1 to the community. So it's estimated that this additional 0.5% over the first 2 years would return $50 million in additional visitor spend into the community, and that in year three, that number would move to $100 million. So you can see a tremendous amount of growth and opportunity that occurs by this investment in the future. So next steps, that brings us to where we are today. We are currently in the petition process, out talking to all of our lodging investors about their needs, bringing them up to speed on this initiative, trying to secure their petition signature of support, moving through city council hearings, and ultimately into the Board of Supervisors hearings after all of the city councils. So the schedule looks like this. We have started working through the process of we've had a city council hearing in Paso Robles. We've been in Grover Beach. We had a city council hearing there. On Monday night, they unanimously approved to move this item forward to the Board of Supervisors. We'll be in Arroyo Grande on the 24th of September, talking to them about the moving the district forward. San Luis Obispo and Paso Robles on October 1st. With your motion to move this forward to your city council, we'll be back in this room on the evening of October 8th, also in Atascadero that same night, and then ultimately in Pismo Beach on October 15th before moving forward to the Board of Supervisors. So to date, we have 20 hotels in Morro Bay, along with a list of vacation rentals that have signed petitions in support of the renewal of the district. And so currently a plethora of support from your community. We're out there continuing to have those conversations with some of you and many others in your community to try to make sure that you're on board to protect tourism, to continue to protect the industry and the advancement of what Visit SloCal is trying to do on behalf of the county, the city of Morro Bay, and you as our lodging investors. So again, we are in front of you today asking you to continue to move this item forward so that we can do that work on your behalf and continue to partner with great partners like Jennifer Little and the city of Morro Bay in our efforts to make sure that we're sustainable as an industry. And I would be happy to take any questions that you might have.
Thank you, Chuck. That was a great presentation. I'll go out right now saying I'm in support of it. We'll talk amongst ourselves also. But I do have a question because we have you here today.
Yeah.
When I look at that chart of where your target markets are, did I miss the Central Valley area? Mm-hmm. Is that a target market area?
It's not. And, again, it goes back to that funnel, right? We are doing work that you cannot do on your own. You have the ability to target Fresno. That's a great target market for you. Pismo Beach targets Fresno. San Luis Obispo targets Fresno. Atascadero targets Fresno. So us duplicating that effort does not serve you. We need to be doing work that you can't do on your own. You are not going to spend money in Denver and Dallas and Seattle and Portland and San Diego and Phoenix. You're not going to do that. You're going to spread your dollars too thin. And so we focus on two major markets in California, the Bay Area and the LA Metro, right? And we invest more than half of our dollars there. It is thought that in that additional half percent, and if you kind of play the round numbers out that I talked about of an additional $1 million in ad spend, it's thought that about more than half of that, about 500,000 of that, would be directly into LA and San Francisco. We really believe, especially with a slowdown in the market, that we need to continue to prime the pump in those key destinations. As the market slows and people think about whether or not they're going to travel, the drive market's going to remain key to this destination as it was back in 2008. But we don't spend money in markets like Fresno and Bakersfield simply because we have great partners like yourself that are already doing that.
One last follow-up question. Do you know, is anybody, maybe outside Vegas, does anybody target those areas?
So Sacramento has a big target. Are you talking about in our county? Or
no.
Just in general?
In general. Dallas one for Fresno travel?
Yep. Yeah, no. But Sacramento has a huge target. Obviously, Yosemite Valley, the Valley Floor, targets Fresno and Bakersfield tremendously. I mean, they changed the name of the airport to include, Yosemite in the Fresno airport name. Equally, when you start getting down to the places like the Inland Empire, they're very focused on the Fresno and Bakersfield area and how they leak business down there. But the Central Coast, that's always been, and even our competitive set. Although Santa Barbara is built on the American Riviera, right, and luxury, San Ynez, they target the Bay or target Fresno and Bakersfield, as does Monterey County. So those are huge markets. I mean, I think the advantage that we have is we are much closer. Those are legacy markets for this destination. When you talk to the individuals that come from there, they're third and fourth generation. They have been coming forever. And so I also think the advertising world is getting more and more difficult, whether you're in, retail product sales like Apple or you're in sales like, tourism and the things that we do. And you see that competitive chart with places like Monterey and Santa Barbara that have a lot more money than us. So I do think staying top of mind and consideration set is important. But I also think making sure that, you're not fully investing your dollars in a market that already comes here is critical. You have to continue to tell them new stories, have to continue to give them reasons to come. We talk about, on the destination management strategy, one of the key items on there is events and festival strategy, something that you guys spend a lot of time in the event space. But, how do we make sure that this past year on Memorial Day weekend, we had 6 major events across the county? From a lodging standpoint, do we really need major events on Memorial Day weekend when people are already coming? Not really sure that's the best use of our funds, right? And so how do we make sure that we're working collectively as a county to make sure that we don't do those things? And so you create things like events to keep markets primed like Bakersfield and Fresno, and you have to remain in the consideration set, but that's not where we spend our dollars. Doesn't mean we don't do earned media there, so I want to be clear on that too. We spend time in trade, we spend time in media, making sure that the Fresno Bee is telling stories about our destination, but we do not invest advertising dollars in that community.
Thank you very much. The work you're doing is really great.
Thank you,
and as we look at a 10-year renewal, I think some of the things that I'd be looking for is you as a key partner for the economic impacts on things like climate change and the risk mitigation that we should be thinking about now. I think the current work you're doing is so strong for the short-term horizons. But when we look at things like we know that increased air travel is an 8% impact on carbon increase into our county, that's that we're doing exactly the right things now. Yeah. But is that sustainable 10 years out? And what are some of the things that would see you as a key partner in helping us to understand the things that are a little bit outside of our purview?
Yeah.
What kinds of things do you see doing as we move forward?
So I think one of the key items on the destination management strategy is sustainability for our community. Again, all of the items, all the 28 recommendations in the destination management strategy are rooted through one filter first. And that filter is, does this maintain or improve the resident quality of life? Mm-hmm. If it does not, we should not. not be doing it, right? Derek Kirk, who's in the audience, is our Director of Community Engagement and Advocacy. Derek runs Point on our destination management strategy and actually worked in as the CEO of the Atascadero Chamber before he joined our organization a couple months ago. So he's running Point on that. But when we talk about sustainability, I think it is important. I mean, the air service thing that you bring up is critical. But when we look at air service, yes, there is a carbon footprint increase on the air service that's coming, but there's a reduction in the amount of cars that are coming. And we're not accounting for that, right? So there's 78 people on a plane. If you divide those by two, right, that's 39 cars on the road coming into the destination versus one plane. So actually the carbon footprint decreases, but we don't account for those things. And so those are the stories that we need to tell. I think when we talk about, you know, I sit on the board of CalTravel, which is our state legislative organization. We just came from their summit last week, and we're having big conversations about things like sustainability. There's a big move, obviously, in the hotel industry right now to move away from single-use plastics in the rooms. You saw Marriott sign on to an initiative about 4 weeks ago now that they're going to remove all of that from the whole chain of Marriott over the next couple of years. I mean, it's a tremendous lift. There's an expense to it, right? But obviously, Marriott believes that that's going to be important to the industry. And we had some partners in the room that say, hey, we shouldn't be thinking about that. It's too hard. And I agree that it's hard, but, you know, we've picked all the low-hanging fruit, and it's now time to start talking about big initiatives that are going to really change the world as we know it, change our destination as we know it, and make sure that we're protecting and leaving a legacy for our children. I have four daughters, and, you know, I want to make sure that they grow up in a world where it is sustainable, and they have the ability to enjoy the same quality of life that we get to enjoy. And that quality of life isn't just in things like single-use plastics. It's in things as these 2,000 hotel rooms come on over the next couple months. I know several of you, the number one issue we hear when we're out talking about the petition renewal from our lodging investors is talent. We are struggling to find talent. And if you think it's hard to find talent now, wait till we open 2,000 rooms across the county. It's only going to get worse. And so one of the key initiatives in the destination management strategy is talent development. How are we working with Cal Poly and Cuesta College? And even more than that, how are we working with our local high schools to help put young adults in place to think about tourism as a long-term career? You know, when I was growing up in Las Vegas, tourism, you kind of got two options. It's either you're going into construction, which my dad's a general contractor, or you're going into the tourism and hospitality world, because that's the world that Vegas was built on. That's not the scenario anymore for most kids. They don't even think about tourism as a long-term career. And so how are we helping prime that pump for those individuals by creating sustainability for our industry, right? It's not just sustainability when we talk about, you know, the eco-environment or senses like that, but it's sustainability in all these other places. How are we thinking about workforce housing and workforce transportation into our communities to make sure that your hotels have the people that they need in order to continue to serve your guests and provide a quality product for them? When we talk about sustainability of customer service, you know, when we did the destination management strategy, the research showed from the visitors intercept for our county, we scored 62% for customer service in our county. I don't know if any of you have kids, but my kids come home with a 62% on a test from school. We're having a conversation. It's probably not going to be a very good one, right? But somehow that's been okay in this community for the last decade. We've got to move off that. And so one of the items in there is a countywide customer service initiative. How do we help the hotels, the retail, the food and beverage, the activities, get the skills and the resources they need to provide better customer service to the individuals that are coming here so that, again, they come more, they stay longer, and they spend more money? And so sustainability for us crosses a bunch of horizons in how we make sure that we, again, continue to protect and improve the industry while making sure that we protect and improve the quality of life for all of us that get to call this great place home.
I think there's another half of that I'm interested in, but I'd love to talk to you about this further, which is the other side of it, which is not only do we have the opportunity, especially with a city like SLO with some of the most aggressive carbon neutral goals in the country, of really becoming a sustainable brand that matches with our brand of becoming a nature destination. So I think there's all sorts of, like, when you think about the dream drive, it could build upon it, the sustainable dream drive. I mean, we're literally the exact point at which a Leaf, a Tesla, and a Volt or a Bolt needs a charge from San Francisco or LA. Yeah. I mean, it's like a perfect,
right.
Like, come here on a charge, and then we'll help you recharge.
Yeah.
So that's.
And I would just add to that, our friends to the north in Monterey County have done a great job with their sustainability campaign over the last couple of years. Tammy Blunt Canavan, my counterpart, most recently there, built that campaign. And so I think some of this is also, I want to make sure when we talk about the destination management strategy, we are not talking about building everything for ourselves from the ground up. As I said to you earlier on this vacation rental piece, we've already done the work. Allow us to help you, right? There's a bunch of organizations who have already done this. How do we learn from them, and how do we take that and make it applicable to our destination?
That's exactly where I see your partnership, of helping us to understand models and successes that have happened in other communities around this. And the other is in risk mitigation, of looking at, we've seen things happen in Florida, like huge algae blooms that happened that just take tourism dollars to zero in major communities like Naples and Sarasota and others. So things like that, what are the things that would be a partner for us and helping us to understand we don't want to go certain places and what we can do to make sure. And consequently, when things happen, a fire or something, how do we get back on our feet as fast as possible? And I think these are countywide issues that you could really help us with.
Yeah, we have deep mitigation in crisis communication. As many of you know, that was the plan that we rolled out when the highway originally closed back in 2016. In addition to the two fires that have occurred in our county over the last 4 years, equally there. And I would say on the other risk mitigation front, again, this really falls in Derek's wheelhouse in the advocacy place, is you probably followed the story going back about two and a half months ago when the Coastal Commission desired to close all of Oceano Dunes to online vehicles. Use. We really believe that's the wrong model, but in risk mitigation, we do believe that there's middle ground, right? And so there are challenges that are occurring at the dunes, and how do we pull up a seat at the table and really help the state and the Coastal Commission and our industry involved to figure out what is the middle ground? Currently you can ride on the, you can drive a off-road vehicle on the Oceano Dunes at 2 o'clock in the morning. I'm not really sure that that's the best idea when there's people out there, walking who have been killed this year because people are driving their car, across the dunes at 2 o'clock in the morning. So there is middle ground. And I think looking at risk mitigation and figuring out how we meet in the middle, not to close the dunes, but to put protocol and measures in place to make sure that, again, it's protected as a community asset resource that none of our counterparts can compete with, right? That's an amazing piece of our community that that we don't have a competitor to. But how do we make sure that, again, it's sustainable for the long term? So those are all going to be key. We talk about this renewal as Visit SoCal 2.0, as we kind of reboot into what's the next version of the organization after the passage of the hopeful passage of the renewal. And I think those are critical items that already show up in the destination management strategy and now require the work to get there.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Steve. So first of all, I just want to say what a paradigm shift for the VCB to Visit SoCal. What a paradigm shift. I mean, it was a struggling organization coming before this organization asking for $10,000 10 years ago.
Yeah.
Or $30,000 so that we could pay our fair share and just have an organization that shook hands across the county. So, Chuck, my hat is off to Chuck and his team for what they have done for the industry over the past 5 years, or almost 5 years, right, coming up. And in terms of just the air travel and the impact on air travel and adding flights, I think it's just incredible that we've gone from the organization coming before us saying, well, we're going to create this account, and it's like a debit account. If they don't get the seats on the flight in Morro Bay, we're looking at each other going, how does that help the industry countywide? What a great way that we're operating now in order to see that impact. It's forward thinking, it's creative, it's sustainable, and I do see a point with just 350,000 residents in our county that we will experience tourism fatigue.
Yes.
And we see tourism fatigue in our own community sometimes, specifically in the high months, July 4th. I mean, I hear it from my own family, you know, oh, man, Mom, I wanted to be here for dinner, but it took me 35 minutes to get from the Rock to the house.
Yeah,
I was surfing, I promise, you know, and I'm hoping they're not texting me while they're driving, right? But, you know, there are impacts that I see over the next 10 years, if this goes through, and I'm wondering how, I know that there's a sustainability plan, but I'm wondering how the organization is going to help address tourism fatigue within the communities, because each community is going to have an individual fatigue point. Do you have some information on that?
I do. I think it's a really great question. When we did the research and analysis around the destination management strategy, there were three communities that rated pretty high on tourism fatigue, and again, it was during certain times of the year. Morro Bay actually wasn't one of them, but again, when you talk about weekends like 4th of July, Pismo Beach wasn't one of them too, and those residents will tell you on 4th of July, it's a bit crazy. The three communities that really stuck out were Cambria, Avila Beach, based on one road in and one road out, right, and Oceano. And so we believe that, you know, that what you're bringing up is going to be a major issue. When you talk about, I mean, let's take Big Sur. You go back 15 years ago, and, you know, Big Sur was a great destination. Now the residents there hate tourism. They hate it because it has overrun their city, right? And they don't want that there anymore. We don't want that to be the case. This plan was built on how do we proactively manage the destination for the next 20 or 30 years to become what we want to be and not by happenstance allow something to happen to us. So one of the greatest advancements that we believe needs to occur over these next several years, and I honestly, I wish I was smart enough to figure this out, but I'm not because I probably wouldn't be standing in front of you. I'd be doing something else. But I love what I do. So from a technology standpoint, it's going to be the ability to notify a customer, to geofence and notify a customer in market that the destination that they are traveling to is overpopulated at that time and to consider a different opportunity. So I would tell you that there's times where Morro Bay wants more customers, and there's time where Morro Bay doesn't want more customers. And there's times where SLO wants more customers, and there's times where they don't want more customers. And so we believe with a county of 3,600 miles, even when you're at capacity, there's destinations in the county who would love those customers to come over there. Right? And so how do we begin to telegraph for that customer in the market from a geofenced technology standpoint? When you enter inside of a radius that is going to take you 35 miles to move a mile and a half from the Rock to your house, how are we making sure that we're telling the customers, don't travel that path, don't take that road? The technology exists. We see it even in our own personal use of Waze, right, as a geo system. And so Waze will tell us, hey, you're traveling down this path. That route now is overcapacitated. You need to take this route. But how do we begin to surface that information in front of a customer from a tourism standpoint? How do we tell them, hey, this is what's happening? How do we this meeting's televised, so I don't want to get too much into this, but how do we begin to do that in our competitive destinations? How do we begin to serve up in Santa Barbara? Hey, they're too full. Why don't you, you know, move up the street and come over here? All of that technology, if you're not aware, exists. I will tell you, one of the things that I'm so proud of, and again, we are a data-based organization. All of our advertising, 95% of our advertising is digital. Every digital ad, every native story, every placement that we make is pixeled. So on the back of that advertising, there's a stamp on it through our partners at Arrivalist. That stamp then attaches itself to your Google profile, and it crosses all of your devices. So if you see our ad on your phone, it then attaches itself to your phone, your tablet, your laptop, your desktop, all of your devices. It then tracks your habits and allows us to understand for the ads that we continue to serve you, what ads are you responding to? Are you responding to a beach ad, a wine ad, an event ad? You know, what are you responding to? It then allows us, it notifies us when you show up in the destination, right? So when it notifies us that you show up in the destination, we can see from our original point of entry with you to when you showed up, how long that took, what you responded to, what market you were coming from. I can tell you that for Seattle, it's about 64 days from my initial touch point to you in order to get you into market. So what does that tell us? That tells us if we're not going to advertise after June 15th, because the market's going to be at capacity, that we need to cut our advertising off in Seattle 65 days before that, because the run rate for that customer is 64 days, right, on average. So here's the great thing. We've just upgraded our platform with Arrivalist, and now going forward, that data will tell us where you showed up in market first, and it will give us your cookie path across the whole market for any destination that you spend more than 2 minutes in. So we will be able to tell you, when you fly into San Luis Obispo Airport, we will be able to tell you how many of those customers come to the city of Morro Bay. When they come to the city of Morro Bay, what's the radius of where they're at and what are they doing? And then where are they going before or after Morro Bay so that you know how customers are moving through your market? And again, that's a way that we're investing our resources and our technology to better inform you in your community to make the strategic decisions that you need to make, not only in the advertising space of where do you advertise and how do you talk to that customer, but also in, you know, when we talk about the destination management strategies, you go back to the, you know, the basics of marketing and the four P's, right? Price, product, promotion, and place. And so much of our work in that space is done in three of those four P's, place, product, and promotion. And so when we talk about those customers moving through, we're in a better position to inform you, how do you create a better sense of place? What are the products that you might be missing in order to make sure that you're capturing those customers for a longer length of stay and more spend? And then how do you go about promoting that to make sure that that's occurring? So the ability to, you know, tell those customers where to move and how to move is going to be critically important over these next couple of years. There's a couple technology companies in the hospitality space that are working hard on that, how far they are to figuring it out. We're not sure, but I will tell you that even when we stood in front of you, Joan, as the chair of this organization 5 years ago to move this forward, the technology space then is completely different now, right? So it's not far away of the ability to do that. And even this story that I just told you about Arrivalist and its ability to follow you is it's scary from a personal standpoint, but I'll tell you, we love it from a marketing standpoint.
So, well, thank you for that, because I am concerned about tourism fatigue. I think we all are. We need the support of the residents in our community. Yes. In order to have a successful economy base, and our economy base here is tourism. And because that's such a strong economic driver, it is the main economic driver in our community, we need to strike a balance where we can have a healthy community and have all of the services that we need, but and provide a customer base for the tourism industry, but also not overwhelm our tiny town of 10,000 residents and one downtown streetlight. So it's a balance that we have to continually look at.
And that's why, again, that filter for the destination management strategy is, does it improve and protect the resident quality of life first? Because if it doesn't, you know, we're just going to create additional problems for the industry that we don't want to deal with. And when we talk about the economics, you know, tourism now makes up 9.7% of the countywide GDP.
Wow.
9.7%. Statewide average for tourism, 2.5%. So it tells you how heavily reliant this county is, and Morro Bay, even I would suggest, is probably even higher than that, right?
Yeah.
But that's what's at risk without the approval of moving the district forward, is we don't have the ability to continue to maintain that.
So one question I had for you regarding that is, you showed a slide that showed, and I'm paraphrasing you, I'm sorry,
you
said a lot of things, so I'm just paraphrasing. You showed a slide that said that dollars per room reduces as the room count goes up.
Yeah.
And that there's a 20% increase in rooms scheduled over the next three and a half to five years, depending on how construction goes.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it make sense that the dollars per room
increase
would also increase because you're having increased revenue? We know, right, I'm assuming that it still holds true, you can tell me whether it's true or not, that new product increases demand and drive to the destination.
Yeah. So in the perfect world, that is absolutely the case, and I do believe that somewhere, you know, I'm not a prognosticator, but somewhere probably 4, 5, 6 years down the road, that will absolutely be the case. The challenge that we have right now, and you saw it in that forecast I shared, occupancy is going to be down and RevPAR is going to be down. That means TOT is going to be down, which means our budget's actually going to shrink over these next couple of years, even with more rooms, because of the volatility of the market. So as the market slows down and we have less travelers without additional, what we are trying to do is offset exactly what you were saying. We're trying to make sure that that forecast in 2020 of a decrease in 3.5% in occupancy and 1.7% in RevPAR actually never happens. How do we level that out? How do we get that occupancy down only 1 point and RevPAR flat? How do we protect that? So if we were having this conversation 5 years ago, I think you would be spot on, because we have seen 10 years of growth in the tourism industry. Never before in the history of tourism tracking, they started tourism tracking in the United States in 1925. Never before in the history of tourism have you had a 10-year growth without a blip, right? We have, but just in these last couple of months, you see it in your TOT report, we see it in the occupancy in the RevPAR report, you're starting to see fatigue, you're starting to see the market slow down. And so because of that, the number is actually going to shrink.
So, well, thank you very much. I just want to say thank you for the great job you're doing, and I appreciate your presentation here today. I think you've gone into a lot of detail, more than we can swallow.
Yeah, we're about 30 minutes over right now, just so you know. So if you guys have more questions for Chuck, I think we should be really poignant on those and then open up to public comment and finish up so that we don't go too far over.
I got something. Yeah, great presentation, Chuck. Thank you for everything you're doing. Obviously, Visit SoCal provides a very important service. I sit on board for other tourism bureaus, or DIAs, every acronym you can think of. Today I sit here, you know, representing Morro Bay with their T-bid. I also see a lot of operating statements from different properties in different counties, some of the ones you mentioned. I don't live in Morro Bay. So I do appreciate how hard it is to do business here in this fragile ecosystem, is a word that you used. It's hard to find entry-level employees. Workforce housing is almost non-existent. Cost of our water is going through the roof. There's a lot of issues, and my concern is, I guess, the process getting here. We obviously support you and your organization and what you do. The timing right now for Morro Bay, adding more expense to our guests, is not good. You know, if I had my choice, if we had more of a say in this matter, you know, other than the 25 phone calls and 40 emails I've gotten in the last 3 days on this matter, you know, we would extend and probably not have a 50% increase, because I think that's what would be better specifically for Morro Bay. If I was in San Luis Obispo, or if I was in Paso Robles, it would be different. But for Morro Bay, there are some specific challenges in doing business right now. So I guess my criticism is, I would have liked to see us be involved more on the ground level rather than just saying it's an up or down vote, yes or no, or you're going to go away and the whole market's going to crash. I would have liked to see us as a group have more input on saying 1 versus 1.5, 5 versus 10 years. It sounds like that ship has already sailed, as you said. So obviously I think we're going to be in support of this. But for Morro Bay, it's going to be a challenge to have that additional expense. But
yeah, I appreciate that, Steve. I think it's an important conversation. You know, I'll apologize to you for not reaching out to you sooner. We did work directly with your general managers in informing that decision, or at least gathering information from them along the way. And sometimes it's unclear to us, you know, where the hierarchy is in the decision making. So I will own that in your properties. Specifically, I think, you know, one of the things that we're talking about, and this has come up through other conversation, is, hey, if Morro Bay gives up this 0.5%, you know, Red and I were talking before the meeting about revenue generation for the community. And so if we give up this 0.5%, you know, we're taking that 0.5% off the table here when we could be using it for something else. So we're essentially taking a tool out of our toolbox and we're giving it away. And what we're saying is, yes, you are, in fact, taking a tool out of your toolbox, and that needs to be clear. But that tool that you're taking out of your toolbox is going to allow us to build a hardware store that's going to give you access to every tool that you need in order to generate more revenue. And so I do see the scenario of, hey, this is always problematic when we talk about the input of the guests. We do know that our guests traveling here are coming from markets and visiting other markets where the tax and assessment rate is not only much higher, but again, they're dealing with markets where where, you know, they have things like resort fees and parking fees that we don't have. So we don't see it in the research. So let me be clear on this, too. There is no research today across the United States that shows that guests make decisions on taxes and assessments. What we do know is that guests make decisions to return based on taxes and assessments. If you were to go to San Francisco today, and let's just for simple math say you were lucky enough to get a room at $100, you would then pay, you know, a 20% assessment and tax, and then you would pay an $80 parking fee, kid you not, right? And then you would pay a $40 resort fee, and all of a sudden your $100 room turned into, you know, $230, right? $240. And you're like, wait a second, next time I'm staying in Oakland and I'll just take the bar over. I'm not going to do that. And so we do believe that there is risk long term if we don't make sure we stay in front of that. But again, even with the increase, we're going to be below the state average. We're going to be below our competitive set. And our goal is obviously based on our 40-to-1 ROI to put that money to work for you as our lodging investor to make sure that your rooms are full and you are getting the help you need. And we are wading into that space, to your point of workforce housing and talent development. And how do we make sure that we're creating a pipeline for you to be successful? So, again, my apologies for not, you know, connecting with you personally on this sooner in advance.
I have a yes or no question. Do you know if the state of California, the California Travel and Tourism Assessment, about 25% of the hotels here in Morro Bay fall into the category where they have to pay into that additional assessment, which is a 0.25, I believe.
It's 19 cents per night.
I'm sorry, excuse me?
19 cents per night.
Right. And so do you know if they have any plans to try and increase that assessment as well or spread it across the board? They do not.
They do not. It's out for referendum. The ballot will be launched in November and will close in December. There is no increase.
There's no increase. Okay. So I wondered about that because that has a direct impact. And that actually takes some of our Morro Bay motel rooms up even further and closer to that 14.9% average statewide that you mentioned. So, okay.
Which, again, will increase this year with the ballot initiatives for TOT across the state of California. That number will move up above 15. As all those communities increase their TOT, the average becomes higher for the state.
One thing I do think you're in a great position, SloCal is that I feel like these dollars going to SloCal are so close. Mm-hmm. You know, there's only so many areas of our county that have tourism type. Well, we all have tourism business, but small. I think of Los Angeles County,
yes,
where you're paying a part of that, and you have a little hotel in Redondo Beach. The direct impact from mm-hmm. that, to me, seems more minimal than what we have here.
Right.
That's why I'm more in support of you know, if we had to balance between spending it ourselves and SloCal, I think it's a good balance.
I'd like to open the floor to public comment.
Thank you, Chuck.
Thank you, Chuck. Seeing none, I'm going to bring it back to our board. And we really have an opportunity here. And I've got to say that 5 years ago, I sat as the chair of Visit Slo before it was Visit Slo. And one of the things that I've worked hard is to get sustainable funding. And not having to go back to the well every year was my biggest challenge 5 years ago, and being able to get that passed was fantastic. For us to have an opportunity for 10 years of non-restricted funding for Visit Slo Cal, I think is fantastic. So I'm going to entertain a motion.
Doc, discussion open.
Right? Okay, so discussion is still open. I'm curious. I hear you loud and clear. I know that costs are going up. Minimum wage is about to go up. Everyone, which, you know, there's always a conversation about minimum wage going up and that it just affects the bottom pool, but it affects every employee all the way up because the lift happens at the bottom and then incrementally everybody's wages rise all the way to the top because of it. So a minimum wage lift is actually a lift financially to any business all the way across the board. It doesn't matter whether you're retail or hotel or, you know, even the doctor's office. You know, it goes up all the way across the board. So there is a lot of lifting financially that's going on with increased impacts that are being put onto businesses. So I do hear that. I think that I am concerned about tourism fatigue in our community. I think that in order for this board and for the community to be successful, we have to have tourists. But I also think in order for the community to remain a community, we have to balance that and to have the community's support. So I'm glad that that's being examined by the folks out in the county. 1.5%, you know, it's a 50%, 0.5%, whatever you want to call it, increase in 10 years. I like the length being extended. I'd like to hear from the rest of the board how they feel about the percent being extended. I understand that this is an up and down vote now as it comes to Morro Bay. Other communities have already approved it, and, you know, the city manager has weighed in. I wish maybe that we would have had at least a conversation coming towards us maybe 3 months ago regarding this, so that there could be a little bit more preparedness. I'm curious if this takes place, this would take place on the fiscal on July 1. Is that a head shake? So how is Vislok handling, I'm wondering, the vacation rental issue, but, you know, that's a discussion. Do they waive the fees and everything? That's just an interesting thing that this would be an automatic and the vacation rental contracts would be impacted by it, but yet we're delicately, you know, tiptoeing through that. They're already in, but the increase is not already in. So, you know, I'm talking about the increase in revenue. So, it doesn't have to be explained.
Right. So the law is that it will take effect on July 1st of 2020. Any contract for business, hotel, vacation rental, RV park that was signed in advance of the passage of the law, which would be January, yep, February, March, does not pay that fee.
Okay.
It doesn't get collected until after.
Same thing. Thank you for that. So good. At least we mirror each other. So we're doing good work there. It's balance. So I'd wait to hear from the board to see where you're coming from on this.
And don't get me wrong, you know, he's preaching in the choir. I firmly believe in everything you're doing here. It's just specific for Morro Bay. Put yourself in the shoes of a vacation rental owner that's going to get an additional 3% assessment, now a 3.5% assessment. On top of everything else that's going on with the economy, it's going to be a little challenging, I would think. But having said that, you know, I am in support of everything, you know, Chuck mentioned. Okay.
Further discussion?
I think. I make a motion that we approve visit slow. I can. Let me put my glasses on. I move that we approve B4 as presented.
I'll second.
Any further comment? Seeing none, I'm going to pull this vote together. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. Any opposed? Looking good. Thank you, Chuck. Going for 10 years. I love it.
Good luck, Chuck.
Okay, now I'd like to open the floor for any declaration of future agenda items that you'd like to see. I have one, and I've been bombarded with folks that are complaining about the public bathrooms not being maintained or being closed and locked, being clogged, not having access to maintenance. And I've heard it from my guests and heard it from some locals, so I'm just bringing that up. Not sure what we as the TBID board can do, but maybe we can make a recommendation that they're maintained longer, better, maybe constructed in the future better. We had some vandalism happen, which is always sad, but that's my only agenda item I'd like to see for next month.
And I have an agenda item. I'd like to ask Jennifer and her crew to maybe come up with some marketing ideas directed directly to the Central Valley, or to say why they feel that's not a good use of funds. I'd like to have, if you could spend a little time putting that together. My gut tells me is that perhaps we just, that you said it's generational, they've been coming, but we may be taking that market for granted. Last time I drove through Fresno, it blew me away that the population on the sign said nearly 600,000 people in Fresno alone, and we are the perfect destination for them, and I just would hate to think that there are those there that maybe do not know about us.
We actually do. We promote heavily into the Valley, but it's through social.
Well,
it's all of our social page.
Something
so.
Together on that for okay. us. It'd be neat
sure.
to see, because I think there's less competition. I'd like to see the proof of my unverified gut feeling saying that there's probably not a lot of competition going after those visitors.
The only thing that I'd like to say is that I asked for a few agenda items last time. Based on board comments and what the board was interested in seeing. So I just wanted to make sure that that you know we're being cognizant of things that are already on the agenda or already in there. One of the items that we need to still finish up is the review of the TOT report, but we were waiting to adjust that TOT report to see what was going to happen with vacation rentals, because we can do some specific things now with vacation rentals. So that'll probably be coming back to us in the future. I just want to make sure we don't clog up with too much stuff. That's all.
Thank you all. I'm going to call this meeting adjourned at 11:20. Have a great afternoon.